Thanks, Mary. So let me start by saying my partner nicely gave me a cold last week, and I want to thank him for that. And so if the backup plan, if my throat gives out, one of these guys is going to step in. So but at least they told me they would. I have no relationships to disclose. So when you submit the abstract in February, it looks a bit different come October. We wanted to focus on social justice, but in looking through the data and the literature and thinking, it really raised some basic questions for us about community public health, nursing education, and particularly the role of public health nursing. So this is Faulkner, "The past is never dead." And so what seems like a new conversation to us is really about the future of public health nursing practice is really not a new one at all. So most of these articles that I'm going to refer to here shortly are from public health nursing. So this is Robertson in 2004. Does advanced community public health nursing practice have a future? So she talks about the shortage of public health nurses from 39%, can you believe that, in 1980 to 17% in 2000. She pointed out what she believed was the problem of biomedicalization of healthcare, that the dominant focus was on direct care, and therefore you lost thinking about those sort of big issues and the population concepts. And then she pointed out the increase in nurse practitioner programs that led to decreased monies for community public health nursing programs. Same year, AACN comes out with their position statement on the practice doctorate in nursing, and we've already talked about that. 2008, this sort of same conversation goes on. This is an article talking about graduate public health nursing education. I think the rest of the title is "At the Crossroads." Now the shortage of public health nursing goes from 15% in 2004 to 8% in 2010. And then she also, or these authors also included a discussion about the shortage of nursing faculty with community public health nursing expertise. SWIDER, this is the article that Mary referred to, where they talk to practice leaders about their views of the DNP. The leaders' perception was that, from what they could see, many DNP curricula was missing public health content. They wondered about what would the advantage of the DNP be over a doctorate in public health. And they raised questions about the viability of existing specialty master's programs. And I think you can sort of see in Mary's data that that has been a real concern about what has happened to that. So then we got to thinking about, well, what are the current factors? So that takes us up to 2009. So what are the current factors impacting community public health nursing? So what we call new public health institutions, and this is trying to capture what historically we have seen as public health nursing role being spread among a variety of other folks. So the expanded role of pharmacists, where'd y'all go get your flu shots and your cold shots? I mean, my partner goes to Bartell Drugs. And I won't go to this link, but this is from California, and you can go on to this link, and it's a little toolkit for the local pharmacists here about how to set up an immunization program. You have increase in for-profit retail clinics, airports, malls. This was just in the nation that came out last week. They're now looking at having a certified communicator in public health that does all that public health education. Another factor is the big growth in public health education across the country. Increase in schools of public health from 29 in 2001 to 52 in 2012. They have people, you know, knocking at their doors. more applicants than they know what to do with. The Nation, again, last month had a piece where they talked about the growth of undergraduate public health education, both in terms of majors and minors. And then you have the push for us, particularly from the IOM, for nursing to partner with schools of public health. And then finally, what I call the long reach of AACN. So you have this new degree with the DMP, you have the new master's essentials, and then you have to ask, or at least we ask, how or have those contributed to an erosion of community public health nursing? So, for example, if you just take a look at the new master's in graduate education, I'm the head of our curriculum committee for our graduate program, so I'm living in the middle of this world. And really, from our perspective, the invisibility of population and social justice. So the word population shows up in Essential 8, and social justice shows up a little bit in 6, under health policy and advocacy. Now, I must tell you, we went through or looking at all the new requirements of the new essentials. And we are probably ever so, we have a track, an option in communities and populations. We are this close to getting rid of it because we have low enrollments. How do you get all the other informatics, all the other requirements, and fit it into a program and not have the program go on for 5 years, right? In addition, we have a separate course on social justice. Well, since social justice is really minimized within the essentials, we're also probably this close to thinking about dropping that course or somehow maybe integrating it. So it really raises questions about what we as a profession are doing and in academia. So what are the unintended consequences of these shifts? So you have a decreased time in the curricula for population concepts and practicum experiences. So if at an undergraduate level, that happens. Then you have a decreased number of graduate students who might be interested in enrolling in community or population public health specialty because they haven't been exposed to it. And then you have, and if you have fewer folks with expertise in that, you have fewer faculty with the expertise to teach in that. But then given A and B, C may not be a problem. I sit around the table and wonder, what am I going to teach sometimes? If you have a decrease in the number of master's and DMP offerings that focus on this expertise or area, do you end up with fewer nurses with that content expertise? And then is there a decreased number of nurses out there with the ability to address social determinants, with the ability to address health inequities? I don't know that we know the answer to that, but it raised questions for us. And so ultimately, back to Kathleen's point about, then what if our aim, if what we're about is really serving vulnerable populations and the underserved, then, you know, what does that mean for them? So is there something unique that nurses with expertise in communities and populations offer? And I don't know what the answer to that is. If there is, then why is there the push to collaborate with schools of public health? Because then what is the message about us and our expertise in public health if we need to be with a school of public health? If you need the MSN and the MPH, which degree is more valuable that those need to always be linked, and why the growth in the number of programs that have the dual degree? If community public health nursing is so unique, why the disinterest by so many potential students? Why? There may be schools I don't know about, but the people I talk to have low enrollments. And that's nothing new. Are we, or already, irrelevant? given the decreased enrollments, the number of people doing the other, the similar positions and that sort of thing. So, and this brings us back to role questions. So how do we meet the needs of underserved and vulnerable populations? Is it back to Lillian Wald, Mary Breckenridge, direct care? Is it program development, surveillance, policy, advocacy, those? Is it case management? The next couple of quotes here, I just want to, I think for me, really bring out this tension about roles. Is it direct care or is it indirect care? So this is Potempa, I'm not sure if I say her name right, but she was the president of AACN when this came out in Nursing Outlook in 2011. Preparing a more highly educated APRN workforce is in the best interest of the public, who will reap the benefits of having greater access to doctorally prepared nurses able to provide primary care. So do you see that? The public will be served by that primary direct care. Here's this announcement last month from AACN about the initiative with the CDC to help build capacity in the public health nursing workforce to measurably increase the population of faculty with knowledge and skills needed to teach public health, to increase the number of graduates from public health nursing programs. So for me, I see this simultaneous message. It's population, public health is really important, but direct care is really, that primary care is really important too, simultaneously going on. So as Faulkner would say, the past is not dead, it's not even past. When Swider et al. Wrote that article in 2009, there was an editorial by Hayes in Public Health Nursing in which she talked about, she says, as DMPs emerge, it is imperative that we are clear within our guild how we wish to define our roles and the outcomes of our work. This quote is from an article that was titled Public Health Nursing in Crisis. And here's what the author said. Public health nursing is experiencing serious difficulties and may be lost as a separate nursing identity. Role confusion is probably the most salient factor in the problems of public health nursing today. Guess the year. 83. So these are not new conversations. So this is from Dickens, and really, I think this says what I, the dichotomy and the tension. I love this work. I love being in this meeting. I love being with you all because of we get to think these thoughts and work through and struggle with this. And yet, I'm really sad. I mean, when I sit around and have conversations with my faculty about, well, your specialty has got really low enrollments. What are we going to do with it? And so I don't know if we're in more or less of a crisis in 1983, but I think there are some tensions and dilemmas that we've created and that we really need some work on thinking about. And I'm going to turn the last slide over to Kathleen to help us think about how to launch into a discussion of this.
Thanks, Dr. Gerke. So one of the things we wanted to be sure this was a dialogue. We wanted to engage your voices in this because we felt that we could pose questions, but the views and insight of people from other places would be very important. One of the things, Who's Who at the Zoo came to us. So in this edition of APHA, I just want to read you a little vignette here. We discuss some of these challenges and provide examples from our experiences working with. We call for future research to identify the core elements of effective programs that improve the health and well-being of disenfranchised community. And these could be words written about nursing programs, but it's about community healthcare workers in New York City. So what we're looking at is the substitution of the same questions that were being asked by Adelaide Nutting and Lillian Wald earlier centuries about who is going to be in this role. And so part of what is so important to us is to think it is that principle of social justice and the integration of what we're trying to see, the discourse of what we are talking about, the equity, in looking at how do we serve people with the increased expectations of nurses. Remember in the 80s when we had primary nursing, it was kind of prima donna nursing, we were supposed to be everything to everybody, and we have moved now into that idea of collaboration more again. But what has happened? What is the cycle of role definition? What is the clarity now, and as we look into the future, how do we translate social justice into the principles of action? Who will work with the disenfranchised? We have moved in the cycle of oppression. I remember learning about this when I was, one of my first degrees was in theology, and when you look at the cycle of oppression, from the periphery, those who are disenfranchised and powerless often work from the periphery and raise the questions and challenge the status quo and work towards the central part of what is our fabric of society, and then at times we then become the oppressors. So the oppressed can become the oppressors as we begin to knit into the fabric without that consciousness and awareness of where we stand. So we always want to have that awareness of where we stand relative to the unintended consequences of what we're putting forward. What is it that would attract somebody to be a public health nurse? Do we need public health nursing? We have a romanticized and glorious vision of who these people were. I mean, I am way inspired when I think about Lillian Wald. I mean, the woman went with great courage into dirt and grime, and I remember as a student nurse being in a room with somebody who had Pseudomonas, and I was soaking this leg, and that smell that you get, you know. I do not have that, you know, now in my office where I'm working and directing things. I am removed from the green slime of those dressing changes and the removing of skin as I debride those wounds. What is it that we do as we advance in practice? And I only bring those visions to us because many of us remember when they said to you as a student nurse, this is a good experience, and you knew it was gruesome, whatever it was you were going to get to do. It was a learning experience, and we were going to experience something for which we would be better for at the end. Whether we were could be remain to be debated. But as we hold this vision, what is it that who are we going to be, and how are we going to shape this covenant or whatever we hold as ourselves of envisioning social justice and bearing it into the practice? And we're talking to the choir here. I mean, these are the people who are devoted to it. How do we bring this to a different level? And as academics, how do we touch the marginalized? In the same way that I bring up the case of the Pseudomonas leg, the lady who was about to lose her leg, who I would sit with and we would talk about her life, up from the mountains outside of Seattle, what do we do? How do we touch from the individual to the aggregate? How do we bring the social capital to bear in what we're taking care of and how we are able to touch those things? And I remember I had a little child who came from one of the migrant farms and came for a transplant. She had leukemia, probably acquired from exposure to pesticides, and as I was taking care of her, we were putting on gloves, and her mother said, I wish we had gloves that fit, because she had a variety of family members at home that fit different hands. And the little girl said to her, but Mommy, at least we have some gloves. And I think the idea of making do has been often what we have done as providers. At least we have something. Maybe we have to say, let's aim high. What can we bring to this? And we would like to invite some of your ideas to discussions here. What do you see, and how do we bring the DNP, the PhD? I mean, I just graduated with my PhD and I'm old because I went back to school at a very old age, but I feel gloriously happy to have had this opportunity to think and to work on the principles of justice, which was what my PhD was focused on, ideas of ethics and justice. How do we integrate these back down to the level of the lady with Pseudomonas and still at the aggregate level assure that we afford programs? So it's a visualization of drainage from a wound to the idea of affording care at the state level, at the disenfranchised. So are there comments that we could invite from you to this discussion? Thank you.
I've got a few feelings about this.
Do you want to stand up so people...
Well, come on,
Betty. Betty is one of the people I first met when I was first teaching. She's an inspirational person.
Well, I have very strong feelings. And I think, you know, it doesn't make me feel sad, actually. It makes me feel kind of fired up. we're really the ones responsible to really take charge of some of this, and in terms of articulating what this will all be, and who are provided and how, and what our relationship is to the public system and the communities we serve and the broader nursing profession. So just to rattle off a few of my thoughts on this, one is that I do think there's going to be fewer, and I think we're seeing it right now, there's fewer and fewer folks coming. Is that so bad? I feel that we're going to have fewer, but the future of nursing report from the Iowa, which is talking mostly about
medicalization.
Still talks about the nurses working to their highest scope of practice. And I thought, I think if we're, health nurses do that, then they're really looking at complex issues in community population. And if everybody does that, we will have fewer, we don't need as many public health nurses that are working at this higher level of practice. And I think that's what public health systems need right now, are people who are doing this larger, higher level coordination and surveillance on who's falling through the cracks and how to do the assurance capacity of that delivery of care is working seamless and accessible and for everybody. And that's really complex practice. So fewer, to me, is not necessarily bad. High level is, I think, what we need, and therefore, what does that mean in terms of the DMT or graduate level education? I think therefore we really do need to step up and really articulate what that is, and I don't think we've done that very well, and that I feel like it's our job to do. I think this, you brought up the primary care and AACM primary care. I think there's opportunities, there's some forces of change here around, again, it's assurance piece. As primary care systems start bursting at the seams, hopefully, in 2014, then we have all that much bigger of a job as public health nurses to be part of that job in terms of that integration of primary care at the population level. And then, lastly, on the poll, I think the question of social justice, I think all nurses, it's the job of nursing. Code of Ethics says that we practice, our practice is built on the foundation of social justice, and that's how we, that's the nature of our practice. That's part of the Code of Ethics for all nurses. Do we all think that way? Probably not. And I recently in an undergrad public health class, and I said something about, I showed a quote from that Code of Ethics. Somebody asked, well, that's just for public health nurses.
Only.
Like other nurses, regular nurses, that's not their job, right? And I said, that's for all nurses. But the fact that they said, isn't that more of a public health nurse focus thing, whatever. My point being that this undergraduate public health student, not a nurse, sees public health nurses as being experts. So I would like to see all nurses are experts in that. They're not, we know that. We have, again, part of our role is to help be leaders in that. We're not just losing our identity as public health nurses, but our role as nurses largely.
But Betty, why don't you introduce yourself so people know where you're from? And
I'm Betty Beckmeyer from the University of Washington. Yeah.
And I think your point is so well taken there, Betty. One of the problems we see is, where do we bring social justice to students? I mean, if we take it out of a curriculum, so do you want to bring up that point you were talking about earlier?
Because social justice is really pretty much invisible in the essentials, and you can read a chapter that Mary and I wrote in a book coming out by Chin et al., where we looked at the essentials. the notion was, well, if we don't have room for a core course on social justice in the master's program, we'll put it in as a thread and everybody can cover it. Well, y'all know how that pretty much goes. I mean, it tends to come and go depending on who's teaching the course, right? So, but that's the discussion we're having.
My comment isn't so much specifically about public health nursing, but just nursing in general and social justice. I'm a pediatric ICU nurse at a hospital on the West Side of Chicago. It's a rural level trauma center, and maybe that hospital is hosting a lot of, you know, gang members in the summer and that kind of thing. And, but I'm also in an undergraduate MBA program. And I think when I first started as a nurse, I kind of thought, you know, if I work at a hospital like this, everyone's going to understand social determinants of health and health inequalities and sort of have a, you know, the effect of racism on health and that. And I discovered that was absolutely not the case. And I almost have the opposite concern that when you have nurses that are exposed constantly to, you know, your young black men who are coming in with gunshot wounds day after day after day, dealing with moms who are on heroin and or drugs, and it reinforces these really awful stereotypes that people find, I think. And so it's almost the opposite problem, where the nurses I work with sometimes have even more negative stereotypes than other people. And I think that's why I think me introducing these issues in undergraduate nursing education is so important, because otherwise they're not giving the school a chance to stay on the team.
Very good point. Very good point.
Hi, I'm Arielle, and I'm agency as well as teaching at the Urban Completion Program in Minnesota, and which I think really kind of helps me. It energizes me in both my positions, but I have to agree with you that, you know, we have to keep this, certainly in the undergraduate, but, you know, I really think we need to see what's wrong with graduate programs, because you need enough people at a grassroots level to understand who he is as an individual, as well as who he is as a school, and that's an expectation at the BSN level. But frequently, a BSN level person doesn't have staff, nurse does not have the goal that they can change systems, so that's why we need to continue this. But less is not better, because I think it'll get.
Right here, and then we'll go to the topic.
I speak very strongly for training for curriculum, whether it's undergraduate or graduate. And that's the harder road. It requires a lot of monitoring. I worked in a school where social justice, health disparities, and cultural diversity were two things we looked at for diversity. And we went through and looked at every course. We did surveys, we talked to people, it was a lot of work, but when you do that over and over, it does become something that whole faculty takes ownership of, and that's what we want. We want to teach it as a professional competency. It's not something we learn off to the side. It should be part of every caring act that you have. It has to be integrated, but it's a lot harder to integrate.
Well, I think the integration piece is really important. So it's not a singular, it has to be the repeated. We know that people don't learn the first time. There's 7 exposures before people can integrate from learning models, we know that. So it has to be repeated.
The cultural humility piece, the social justice piece, evidence, ethics in general, it has to be part of everything we teach. And just as when you tell somebody your course has to have your course on ecology or civics or whatever, has to include an ethics piece. They don't argue with that. And if they're not an ethics expert, they don't know how to help them. They should also have a cultural piece. They should also have a health disparities piece. They should also have a social justice piece. And that requires a lot of work to bring to the full faculty.
It's just wonderful. What institution do you work at?
the one I was referring to is in Colorado. I'm not there anymore.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's a key piece.
Yeah, it took a lot of work on it.
Yeah, it doesn't just happen, does it?
Yeah, I think I just want to add to that, though. I think if you don't have enough core faculty who believe in the way that you are describing, it becomes very difficult. We just voted in, and I voted against, a new curriculum, totally new curriculum. I mean, it doesn't even, it has no mental health clinical and no public health clinical. And so I think, okay, well, that's what I keep, so I don't know where I'll be in the future, but, you know, I think about, well, that'll be very interesting to see. And so there was a discussion about population. Well, in the way that the population is conceived by the majority of the faculty who voted for this, it's not the population that we in this room think about. It's the aggregate. It's the population with COPD. It's the population with diabetes. It's the population with, you know, X, whatever that disease is. And then they'll say, well, yeah, we do population health because we think about these groups.
Lots of people with that disease.
And so, you know, out of, you know, the fact that there were three of us that voted against it. And
you
so...
You have standard bearers at a high level.
Yeah,
when you fill out, if you make a new curriculum framework, that's part of it. So that when you go to the curriculum committee and say, why is this in these courses, you've got something to affect a lot. When we had a subcommittee in the
curriculum
committee,
we had
to go back and talk to the faculty over and over about using the information we had in the courses. And they were ready to do it little by little.
I'm one of those, Olympian antique but I actually graduated from a school of public health in a graduate program in nursing that was Inland accredited as a graduate program in nursing back in the 70s. So my group were really dying off there. But I ascribe to the idea that we do need more people with public health backgrounds. And if you look at the Ashby paper on who teaches, who can teach public health and health nursing, they're recommending a doctorate in the public health nursing. And I think I'd like to see ADHA get a little more involved, maybe just to apply some kind of it in what the education level should be. I also am a unique creature in that when I was in my master's in public health program, I was also in a pilot practitioner program. And so I had to actually complete three different major areas, one in education, one in community mental health, and one in primary care to get out of that program. But it was only 2 years, but that was when there were traineeships and I didn't have to work for 2 years. And I was single and didn't but I think there are a couple things. I've taught politics and public health for many, many years, so I believe in co-optation of the enemy. Well, part of this is I think, and I think with Olson Keller, I'm a Minnesota person, this is true, we're all, public health can occur anywhere. So, yes, we have to have more faculty prepared to teach it. Right now, what I see is more nurse practitioner, primary care providers teaching public health, because the assumption is that, well, they're all in community, so they know how to do this. And seeing as I've done both, I know that they don't know how to do it. But I think, you know, what I do is I would say, okay, what public health do you practice in the acute care setting? What public health? And trying to get the acute care faculty at least. I mean, I work with acute care faculty that don't know the prevention framework.
Because it's too late for taking care of the
What is that? So I do think that there is, it's a much broader issue than whether there are enough of us. It is incorporating our view of the world into other nursing faculty, which I've taught at four universities in the last 5 years. I'm doing some retirement for. But, and it's no different no matter where I go. You know, it's all the same. And for the ethics issue, I've been teaching for 35 years and I have the same problem throughout. Students do not, they put their code of ethics away after your foundational course. You say, what is the principle? What is the ethical principle? And no matter what university I teach at, the students don't know. And so you have to go back. You have to, you know, social justice, what is the social framework? And you have to go back. So the idea that it's addressed to the person says, unless the faculty understand and value, even more than understand, is value the content that we hold here, not the work that I've integrated in. I've been there, I've done that, and I've been on the losing end of that one. So I don't want to come as a wet blanket. But I do think that we need more of us, and I think we need from the top down, and maybe we've lost the AAPM. But I think we have other venues, ACHA, Black Council, ASHMAE, some of the people in the ACHS. We see that, you know, we need to form coalitions and work harder on that.
Shouldn't have done what we've done. Now we need to try and rectify it. I don't know. I mean, it'll be very
that's
interesting
be
to
really
see.
Really important fight is to know that CDC.
How that's going to transpire and who is part of that. And is AACN partnering with any public health nursing organizations with CDC? I mean, I don't really know. Does anybody know the details?
I read an ad that they ran for program manager.
Right. Yeah, that's all I saw too. And it looks like a great job for someone in this room to bring that public health forward.
It looks like
yeah.
An end of
the
normal day.
Mm-hmm.
I have talked to them actually about kind of what they do with the building and whatnot, and it's a little nebulous at this point, but I know the Quad Council is working with them, but their intention is to establish an expert panel of public health nurses, both in practice as well as in academia, because they want to bridge that gap as well as in practice and academia. And the intent is to have that expert panel develop tools that schools and nursing can use to integrate concepts for all the curriculum. And at all
undergrad and
graduate.
Okay.
So let's have you and then back to
her. Well, first of all, I agree. We were considering at work company at work, but we were considering having a dedicated public conference over evaluating. I think you're never going to go back on the being homogeneous on this issue, and I would love to critical theory to be taught everywhere. But I do think that there is this concept of creative deviance, and I think you all rest, you bring truth. I mean, and I think we have to celebrate that, and I think that students want a job. They clearly look at, where can I get a job? What does that look like? What would it look like day to day when I show up for work? That kind of thing. We have to remember that, because it's easy to get off on the more buses, but the fact is, I think, I don't know if there's research on how people eventually end up in public health nursing, but I know as students, all you can do is plant a seed. And the first time around, they all want to be ER nurses, ICU nurses, they want to be, you know, because it's clear what it is, and they know they're going to get a job. And they're going to be regimented, they're going to be told what to do. That's safe and comfortable for them. So I think that we need to get the message out what do public health nurses really want.
So I'm trying to remember the name of the old British anarchist that I wanted to quote in the tradition of the panelists quoting great writers. But I got the sense that I just kind of want to blow it all up and start again. And I raise this point kind of with a kind of mock seriousness, because your conversation about your demonstration that this has been a perennial annual process inside the hand-wringing that public health nursing has had, or nursing itself has had, in terms of role confusion and role definition. And also, then your spiking comment about who is the oppressor, right? How much are we in this cycle of oppression where we're going to point the finger at ASDM, or we're going to blow up something.
Or at ourselves.
Or at ourselves. And so I'm sort of left with this sort of reflection of where is the emancipatory action? What part, what role do we need to play inside our emancipatory action? And then reflecting on that, although I respect all of the people in this room, there are another 200 public health nurses at this conference at different presentations this afternoon doing equally important, vital work. I mean, I sat in the Black Caucus, and it was an amazing public health nurse. She raised a great question, and I just was thinking, oh my God, where did this person come from? She's just great, you know. And I'm sure you've had individual experiences like that around this campus right now. So I think that my comment on that was kind of like to go back to that quote that came from the community health worker movement, and to really begin to think of ourselves as relevant, and to think of the revolutionary idea that that might in fact propose, that we have made ourselves irrelevant. And that's revolution. It's not revolution to do, you know, to say that, you know, I worked for the American Lung Association, and we were professionals at reinventing ourselves. After we fixed tuberculosis, we went on to discover another lung disease. Same thing, you know, we fixed tobacco, and now we're doing asthma, and then we fixed, you know, we just keep on, you know. At some point in time, we need to address that question of irrelevancy and celebrate it in a certain way. And how can we do that in a courageous way that changes who we are as individuals and changes the people that we work with?
I think that's a good point. The chaos theory often invites us to that point of vulnerability ourselves. And in my old age, getting my PhD at age that I didn't graduate, I know that part of inviting myself to that point of self-reflection and vulnerability, what do I do that calls newness to the situation? Because I do not know that we have those answers, and that's why we did not want to fill this time with conversation only, but to invite everyone to speak. And I believe there was two over here, you and then.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, coming to the end of my career. But I think that having been in public health nursing and public health nursing education for a long time, it seems like a lot of our time is spent in trying to differentiate ourselves from other practicing nurses. You know, we went through the home care thing, and you know, then we went through the home visiting is no longer what we do, we're just focused on populations. And, you know, it just seems to me that public health nurses, by their essence, need to respond to social change and social action. And, you know, when you think about some of these people like William Walden and so forth, you know, the mark of their practice, even before Nightingale, was outreach. And I absolutely know that we're the only nurses who know how to do that well. And when you think about that, and then you think about, you know, that people derive satisfaction from clinical practice, and we sort of wipe that term out of our, we can't talk about clinical anymore because we don't do hands-on. I just think that in trying to differentiate ourselves always from somebody else rather than just being who we are, and doing the interventions that are required by that situation, for that population, for that community, the research and the kinds of things that we could derive from that would probably make it a little bit clearer. But the reality probably is that we're never going to be able to figure out who we are because it's always changing, you know, or it should be.
Well, if we're responding to social change all the time, which we do because of reimbursement and different things that happen, you look at HIV and look at biocomparatives, I mean, it's always changing. I just think we've wasted a lot of time trying to do that, to differentiate ourselves when we could be doing other things. I'm not trying to blame us, but in fighting for the specialty, we've got to come up with a different strategy other than new definitions that differentiate us, that say we do this and we don't do this. Because every time we say we do something, and then, you know, 2 years down the road, somebody else says, well, we do that too. You know, it's not what we do as much as who we are.
And where are you coming from? I mean,
University of Nebraska Medical Center. You know, and I grew up in public health nursing doing the district model, which if we brought that back, we've never had any problems figuring out who we are. Because we did do the community and all the populations in it and individuals and all of that, and we kind of knew what we were doing. And we kind of learned this week.
I think there's lots of really great comments here, really looking at how we want social justice and trade for everybody and a lot of different things. But I'm thinking that we're identifying that there is a role or concept or knowledge that we want to preserve. We don't want it to get lost. We want it to be continued and expanded and expertise that nurses have always had. But at the same time, I don't think we want to be territorial. And we want to be moving forward with this interdisciplinary that can all come to the table in a new way era that we're in. I think some of the Affordable Care Act stuff will bring us to this point. Opportunity. So to me the question is how can we preserve that essential knowledge and skill in a non-territorial way, in a way that's open and
comfortable. Do you want to tell us where you're from?
I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm from the State
University. One of the things we were really, as we were talking about this point together last night in our very quiet hotel room. One of the things we were talking about was that social justice is the foundation that we want to preserve, whether it is within the role of nursing, but it is within that concept that we don't lose sight. And it kind of brings me to the quote that I just wanted to tell you. I ran into a dear friend of mine who went to school with him in the royalty of our PHN group here. And he said to me, at times my heart is sad because I come here and hear the commentary of where government has failed in all this. And what is it that we should do? Those of us who work in public health should not be just the bearers of how we failed, because we have borne the brunt of this for many years. But maybe we need to find a way to acknowledge what has been worth something, and that as we look forward, there may be new ways to live that out. And I think it's very easy to condemn, and it's very difficult to critique with a vision of change and positive hope. But I have to say that we feel very encouraged to keep working on social justice and to be in this with people like you and to hear the ideas that you share and the ability to hold difference and not to say either or, but to live within that concept. So we thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.